Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The name of my program is called World Watchers, and it's broadcast number 670, May the 6th, 1985. I suggest for you listeners, you new listeners, or you longtime listeners to the radio, if you have a tape recorder, I'll go very slowly in the beginning, which I seldom do, because I want you to tape record this broadcast. It's a must, it's a first, and it's very, very important. The President of the United States literally declared World War III this last week when he was in Germany. And that quotation I put on the air last week that I probably will put on every week from now on, the one of the advisor of Helmut Kohl, is, in quotes, "If one tries to act symbolically, one has to choose the symbols carefully." And I will illustrate each week for you the symbols that are going to go through the news, as many as I can in 1 hour, and hit on those subjects as I share the news with you. Now, I want to get back to the important links of the Waffen-SS and Lev Dobrianski, Reagan's ambassador to the Bahamas. I started it last week, and I got into it. It's the relationship to the Battle of the Bulge, but I have to, again, put that off for one more week and hopefully get back to it next week and continue on the significance of Bitburg. Bitburg isn't going away. I picked up the Watergate story the day they were arrested. That was June 18th, 1972. I knew that Frank Sturgis was Frank Fiorini, the fellow that worked with Lee Harvey Oswald. I knew that James McCord was chief of security for Langley, Virginia, but he also worked with the Los Angeles Police Department and was in on part of the plot of Squad 19 to kill Nixon and effect a literal coup, the second major coup in the United States since the Kennedy assassination, and it involved E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis, and the links of Young Americans for Freedom and William Buckley back to Munich, Germany. And I wrote in that article about Project Paperclip. And I want to remind you of those things because those were the first links to the Nazis in the United States to Watergate and the Watergate defendants and people involved. Now, the Bitburg is filled and ripe with so much symbolism. We can't do it in 1 hour, as I say, but I will continue to do it. And I do want to make one point clear. I probably have before, but I'll make it again. None of this has anything to do with a Jewish problem. This is a Gentile problem. This is a Gentile world. There's very few Jews, and most of them have already been wiped out. I've been on the air 14 years. There's 600 Jewish families on the Monterey Peninsula. And you can correct me if I'm wrong and send me a postcard, but I don't think there are 10 regular Jewish listeners every week, including a ratio, an audience that reaches out to 1 million people or could. There's not 1 million listening. But regular listeners, correct me if I'm wrong. I've had very nasty relationships with the rabbi in this community. I'm not going to go into them. But what I'm talking about has nothing to do, when I said Bitburg, it has nothing to do with Holocaust. It has to do with us and World War III and a lot of things that even the nuclear freeze people don't want to face. It's more than nuclear bombs. It is the total plans for a first strike that could eradicate everything, and it isn't atomic bombs. It has other ways of going about doing what they want to do. Now, the San Francisco Chronicle had their symbolism, the front pages of the Monday papers, of course. I didn't watch the TV news yesterday. But May the 6th, 1985, there's a picture of Chancellor and Mrs. Kohl, Ronald Reagan and Nancy, standing in front of two tombstones of the Waffen-SS. They're directly in front of them. They didn't avoid them by going to the flat places where the grave sides are. They're standing behind them, so you see them right there. Chancellor Helmut Kohl is looking directly at the grave, glancing to the grave at one side. Mrs. Kohl is staring at the second grave of the Waffen-SS. Ronald Reagan and Nancy, who are on camera during the photographing session, one is smiling and looking to the right, and the other is looking to the left, but their bodies are faced forward, so as soon as the cameras leave and they straighten up, they'll be looking directly to those two headstones. The second picture, the front page of Monterey Herald, May the 6th, there's Ronald Reagan placing that wreath at the cemetery at Bitburg. But in front of him, again, right on camera, is the tombstone of the Waffen-SS. He's behind it. with General Matthew B. Ridgway, and the news article said they were inches away, a few feet away, from the tombstone of the Waffen-SS. A few feet is 24 inches, so in front of the picture is the tombstone, and behind it there is the president and General Ridgway laying a wreath. Another picture, not a picture, but a large article alongside of it, in big black letters, President urges West Germany to support the Star Wars system. And that is our invitation to World War III. We forgive you. We reconcile. The key word is reconcile. As soon as they reconciled, there was a news story in Los Angeles last week that we should now give the citizenship back to Mr. Rudolph, who ran the death camps at Dora, where they made the rocket and missiles that were to bomb and try to wipe out London and to control the world eventually. We brought them over here for that purpose. We have reconciled now. Give him his citizenship back, the fellow that lived in Palo Alto. And now the evening news this evening on Monday, NBC, the effort now to reconcile, stop deporting the Nazis, the war criminals, the Office of Special Investigation. That's what I started last week and will continue on. It's a lead story in NBC, May the 6th. We're reconciled now with the past. Look up the word reconciliation. We have forgiven the Waffen-SS. They were right. Russia was the enemy. Let's get together now and do what we should have done before. Now, there was emphasis in both my local papers this morning. That's all I had a chance to read this morning this event. They said that Ronald Reagan wanted a Gettysburg-type speech at Bergen-Belsen, so they brought in an important speechwriter, Kenneth Kachigian of San Clemente, K-H-A-C-H-I-G-I-A-N, a former speechwriter for Reagan and a speechwriter for Gerald Ford and Richard Nixon, who flew to Washington and took 10 days to write that careful Gettysburg-type speech. The difference is quite clear. In case you haven't made it, I'll illustrate just once, cover it just one time. Unless I'm under the wrong impression, Abraham Lincoln wrote his own speech. It wasn't done to sell a point or to do anything so devious that Ronald Reagan was doing, and he didn't want to go to Bergen-Belsen in the first place. Here they bring in a speechwriter who worked for Richard Nixon, the Nazi lover, helped bring in Project Paperclip, scientists who avowed the Fourth Reich, the Third Reich, and into the Thousand-Year Reich, and were never sorry about what happened, and Nikolai Maloxa to his Whittier offices, and was the protege of Otto von Bolschwing, who conceived and instructed the horrible things that happened, the massacres, while his underman is hung, or not hung, but given the electric chair in Israel, Adolf Eichmann. They give Eichmann the chair, and von Bolschwing is running Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan in California. And then the speechwriter for Gerald Ford, the Warren Commission covered up the Nazi involvements that I wrote about briefly in one article, and I could do hours. I should probably write a book on it right now. The speechwriter for Ford and Nixon, who covered up the crime of the century in the United States, the murder of John Kennedy. And here comes Reagan, who wants to always quote Franklin Roosevelt, always quote John Kennedy. Then he stands out there and quotes Anne Frank. It is so disgusting. Then he goes to the military base, where he gets a lot of attention, and then tells them that the people buried there were simply soldiers in the German army. Don't have any collective guilt. It's okay. And of course, the press had a story, Washington Post, Reagan's speech at death camp praised. In 12 hours, how could you praise it? How would you know what it was and what it really meant to say? Now, there was a story in the San Francisco Chronicle this morning, Union County, New Jersey, that April 21st, there was a birthday party to celebrate Adolf Hitler that was held in a bar there owned by German-born Dieter Homburg, H-O-M-B-U-R-G. He's tired of hearing of the Holocaust all the time. He had a birthday cake decorated with swastikas and at least one guest, and there could have been more, but they said one. That makes it all right. One guest was wearing the stormtrooper uniform, the SS stormtrooper, and he was tired of hearing about it. a lot of people at the military base at Bitburg didn't even know what the Holocaust was, and people there that talked about it were surprised at all the fuss because the American and German textbooks don't even go into this, but the man with the swastika and the birthday cake for Adolf, he's heard too much. Helen Thomas had a story in the UPI. Reagan takes a walk through hell. This is the speech that took 10 days to write. In quotes, the survivors carry a memory beyond anything we can comprehend, he said. Well, that's true. Second sentence, the awful evil started by one man, an evil that victimized all the world with its destruction. Do you believe in the one man theory of history? I'll give you a history lesson next week on what started World War I, World War II, and World War III. The same speech writers had said Nixon was all Watergate, Hitler was all World War II, and Oswald was all the Kennedy assassination. It was reduced to one man, or Sirhan. Sirhan was one lonely man that made Richard Nixon possible as president, and they reduce it down to one man. So that, again, was the speechwriter giving the Gettysburg Address. And if you didn't have enough symbolism, you had a picture, if you were lucky, on the front page of your paper. It was on the L.A. Herald. It was Baron George Adolf, or Adolf Hitler, Sigismund von Holzenschurer. I guess you know the H-O-L-Z-S-C-H-U-H-R-E-R. Adolf von Holzenschurer in front of his castle with his German shepherd dog named Caesar, of course. And Hitler was his godfather, and that's where Ronald Reagan stayed. Now, Reagan was supposed to have been there 3 years ago, but when he was running for president, he wouldn't have gotten so much Jewish vote if he said, I'm staying with the godson of Adolf Hitler. But now that he's president and the war has been officially declared, he can stay with the godson of Adolf Hitler and have his picture. Castle Ho says, Hitler was his godfather, and underneath, he might say, I am proud of it. One brief article, because I'm going to separate the people that were for the visit and those that were against it. That's terribly important to delineate now as this war builds up. Bishop O'Connor, one of the most conservative people in the entire ministry, along with Jerry Falwell, of course, and Billy Graham, who are no small fries in this kind of rhetoric of whipping people up. Archbishop O'Connor, who was just elected by the Pope to be the next cardinal designate from New York City, who's worked with the United States military and the Navy and is being compared to Cardinal Spellman, said yesterday that he had sent a wire to President Reagan asking him to cancel the German military visit. Don't give the appearance of honoring the Nazis. Now, Reagan is so close to the Vatican with William Wilson, our envoy to the Vatican, and being put in by Robert Keith Gray, and all of the links of the Vatican to Ronald Reagan. I don't have to run down all the Knights of Malta and William Casey and all of them. The cardinal-elect is saying, please don't go. I'm sending you this letter. Falwell was on cable news along the same lines. His own pastor, Mr. Mumau, is in demonstration speaking at his own church yesterday on the evil of going there. But the most conservative, and he would not listen to the new cardinal-elect. He used him to get elected. He used Falwell to get him elected. He used Billy Graham to get him elected. And now that he's a president, he has combined with the German forces, which was what Reagan was about all along. Now, before he went, but on too short notice, I mentioned on the air, and I will send to you, if I haven't send a self-addressed stamped envelope, because I'm sending these public officials and news people around the world, that large sheet that I mentioned on the past broadcast, the letter to President Reagan about the most important thing on your mind is Star Wars. The day after the visit, the front letters Star Wars. I mentioned Daniel Graham and Fritz Kramer and the links of them to the Waffen-SS and the Malmedy Massacre, and that I wanted to know, and I've had this many times on the air, I wanted to know if the Fritz Kramer, who's the advisor to the Pentagon, the international Kramer, is the same as Hitler's general, Fritz Kramer. I am convinced more and more he is. I wasn't flooded with calls or letters from the White House saying, you silly fool, no wonder you're worried, but that isn't the guy. Now, I'm building up to something. As I say, I'm going slowly on this one, even though I usually talk very fast. August 27th, 1984, you regular listeners know that I wrote in regards to the John DeLorean trial that the money from John DeLorean allegedly went into Klaus Barbie's money in Zurich, Switzerland, November 13th to 15th, 1983, and that it went into the hands of Fritz Steinecker, S-T-E-I-N-A-C-K-E-R, who flew from Germany to Zurich to put in money from the DeLorean cash missing to Klaus Barbie to Zurich to put it into Joseph Mengele's account. Now, this story has sat in limbo for several years, although we repeat it when it's appropriate on World Watchers. And finally, a writer from the New York Times got in touch with me about a week and a half ago, and he was ready to contact the people who gave me the information, who were involved. And in the 2 years since I got it, I've checked every possible way, and it seemed to be holding up. And I repeated on August the 1st, 1983, more about these connections and how they came about, dumping this money into the account. It was November 1982, November 13th to 15th, 82, 3 years ago, that I mentioned that it was put into the account. So finally, the writer from the New York Times was ready to do the story. And I contacted the two people involved and gave him their numbers. And he called me Monday afternoon. I was just ready to go to Kazoo and hadn't heard from one of the parties who had a lot of the information. So I said, okay, I'll call him. I'm going to Los Angeles tomorrow morning. That was on Tuesday. And as soon as I get there, I'll call him. And I called up this particular friend, worker, associate. I hadn't talked to him for a long time. And I'm running down for you, as I say, very slowly what happened, because you have to let sink into you. And as I say, I hope you're taping it, the implications of what I'm going to tell you right now. He said, May, I'm glad to hear from you. I haven't talked to you in a long time. He said, I have something really exciting to tell you. He said, the same gentleman, and I'm not going to give his name on the air, he's a courier for the Nazi money from Klaus Barbie to Mengele. He may be a lot of other things. I know where city he was born in, where he went to school. Works for the Associated Press. I won't put his name on the air, but I did put the attorney for Mengele on the air. And it was because of the details I had in a conference in Vienna that a group of people decided to try and go for the story, and Simon Wiesenthal had been sitting on it for several years and refused to even acknowledge it until it unfolded in the New York Times and publicly other ways, so that they couldn't avoid it. If they could get out of it, okay, but they still may put a lid on this bottle, but I doubt it at this point. He said this courier put more money into the account of Joseph Mengele. They've been watching him very carefully because these men want the reward for him, and they were after Mengele for a group of private citizens when there never was a $1 million reward. Believe me, now it's $1 million. He said this same courier went with two men from Kennedy Airport. This was April the 12th on Friday, and took a plane, a private plane, like helicopter, small one, to LaGuardia. I'm giving you details now. And then they took a commercial plane to Zurich, Switzerland, and met with the same person and put money into Mengele's account right now while they're looking for him. $1 million reward by Reverend Moon and Arnaud de Borchgrave that I made fun of last week, and also $1 million from the Justice Department, Attorney General Edwin Meese. A man named Sam Foxman works for these two people. One of the people that was with the courier is from the B'nai B'rith, and he gave me his name. He works with the CIA. He had strong ties to the Somoza government. Of course, Somoza, who graduated from West Point, was the first country to recognize Israel as a country. And he told me his name and how they went to took this money, and he said there was $65,000 in cash and a $28,000 check from the Institute for Historic Review in California, but he didn't know what that was. And I said, that is the Liberty Lobby Willie Cardo's group that have been publishing this information and having conferences for 6 years with PhDs and professors to say the Holocaust never existed. So the Institute for Historical Review was funding Joseph Mengele at least one check of $28,000. This person had people in Switzerland when the airplanes arrived at customs who got the information about the two checks. And before he finished all of this, he was telling me these details. He said, "What are you working on now? What area?" Because he doesn't take the weekly tapes. I said, "I'm working on Fritz Kramer, Hitler's general, and Fritz Kramer, Henry Kissinger's mentor, and the role that each of them had in the Battle of the Bulge, because I believe they're the same person." And my friend said to me, "Who is that you're working on?" I said, "Fritz Kramer." Spelled it out. He said, "Fritz Kramer was on the airplane with these two men from B'nai B'rith and the courier from Klaus Barbie that went to Zurich, Switzerland. Fritz Kramer from the Pentagon." I called the Attorney General's office immediately, and his secretary took down this letter that I read to her, and she typed it. For Attorney General Edwin Meese, "The Justice Department has offered $1 million reward for locating Nazi war criminal Joseph Mengele. Mr. Fritz Kramer, associate with Lieutenant General Daniel Graham, Star Wars Graham, made a trip to Zurich, Switzerland 3 weeks ago to put money into the account of Joseph Mengele. President Reagan's top advisors are funding Nazi Mengele with $58,000 cash and a check of $28,000 from California to support this war criminal, while Sven Kramer, S-V-E-N-D Kramer, Fritz Kramer's son, is national security advisor to Ronald Reagan. If you don't call off the Bitburg Cemetery visit," which he didn't do, "this information should someday make headlines, not by Sunday. German President Richard von Weizsäcker, W-E-I-S-Z-A-C-K-E-R, is behind the Bitburg visit. I will call you in 2 days and provide you with more details on Fritz Kramer's trip to Zurich." I didn't want to put it all in at one time, and I sent that out. Now, that takes guts, I admit that, and it's a dangerous precedent to do, I admit that, but I felt it was necessary. My anger was so intense, and I had detailed these dogs for so long. I have wanted to find out if Hitler's general was running our Pentagon, but never in my wildest dreams would I think that this man would be a possible courier. But this again is the Watergate parallel, that people have missed the point of Watergate. Even well-known people that are on the radio and talk about Nazis, I don't want to mention particular names, but newscasters and close friends of mine, they have never read my Watergate story on what Watergate was about. They talk about it on the air as if they're still confused. Watergate was the top people of the intelligence community planting evidence in the Democratic headquarters so that when there would be riots in Miami, the Democrats would be blamed. And if Nixon were killed and Agnew became president, the Democrats, the radicals, the anti-war people would be blamed. Now, this wasn't a mysterious deduction. This was Lewis Tackwood working for the police department when it was called off because of the ITT scandal in San Diego and was moved to Miami. And it was the same people with the same intent doing the same thing. So that is no different. Now, in this particular story, the point, I don't want to get this point lost at all, about my emphasis on the Battle of the Bulge all these years, on the emphasis of wanting to know who this Fritz Kramer is, who's never seen her photograph, pleading with public officials, pleading with subscribers, whoever I see or talk about. Now, visualize a trip to Europe with these three elements that I'll run down for you, and you can take your pen and pencil and add to this list and mail it to me or call me. Fritz Kramer, who was with the Nazis at Oberammergau, and I want to detail some of those again with you. who was in the Battle of the Bulge, the German one, and the so-called American, U.S. Army intelligence, the German one working with Army intelligence after the war, and the American one, if they're not the same, but they are, plans offer the officer of the Pentagon, sharing the offices with Star Wars Graham, who wants a first strike, and the day of Bitburg, the president is asking for, let's get that on. Graham and Kramer sharing offices with somebody like Mr. Posonoy, P-O-S-O-N-Y, who is a member of the World Anti-Communist League with John Singlaub, an advisor to the Pentagon working with the Waffen-SS, the mentor of Henry Kissinger and Alex Haig and Helmut Sonnenfeld, who have worked with every Nazi and put them into power since World War II that they could. The Henry Kissinger working with Task Force 157 with George Bush and the implications of that. Task Force 157 setting up the Nugent Hand Bank, working with Frank Turple, who was involved at St. Peter's Square, working with Mr. Aja and also being at Grenada at the time that Maurice Bishop was killed. And Edwin Wilson arming that Nazi Gaddafi, who was trained by Reinhard Gehlen when he was a young man. Otto Skorzeny brought the Nazis from South America to take Mr. Gaddafi and put him into the training of the Nazis, the Waffen-SS, that they had experienced earlier. Now, there is a picture of George Bush floating somewhere, if it hasn't been totally erased or destroyed, with Klaus Barbie in San Francisco in 1982 when Barbie was in a uniform, still in a uniform. Task Force 157 involved Robert Keith Gray's office. That's the man that got Mrs. Edwin Meese a job that bailed out our attorney general while he is offering a reward, and they're paying Joseph Mengele at this time. Mrs. Tom Braden, her husband's the great left on CNN News. He used to be right opposite Buchanan, who's been in charge of all White House communication, CIA director in South America, setting up AFL-CIO and the terror network in South America, Frank Mankiewicz from the so-called Democratic Party, the offices of William Casey and Paul Exalt, and that office represents the country of Turkey, the one that let Aja out and carefully arranged him and with the werewolves and the various people and Nazi elements until he's out there asking which way does the Pope come, takes a shot, and then a year and a half later creates that cockamania story. The implications, if this is the same Kramer, is the same age, and we have a right, the American people have a right, to see him now and say, no, I didn't go to Zurich. No, I don't carry money. No, you're off your rocker. This didn't happen. Right now, we have to know. Now, as far as the Institute for Historical Review sending a check, the two people that have really been the bane of my existence are Mark Lane and Bernard Fensterwald, the so-called investigators of the Kennedy assassination. Fensterwald with the Committee to Investigate Assassinations, and Mark Lane, and since 1976, I was accusing him and putting in a sheet with every letter, why is he hiding the Nazis and the Kennedy assassination? Mark Lane is the attorney for Willie Cardo and the man who runs that Institute for Historical Review while money is going to Joseph Mengele in Zurich, Switzerland. Mark Lane, who had you, Trevor Roper, write the introduction to Rush to Judgment, from British intelligence, had worked with William Stevenson of Intrepid, covering up Permandex and the British-American-Canadian Corporation to rearm the German munition cartels by May the 8th, 1945, the anniversary they were to start all over again. World War III started then. You, Trevor Roper, hiding the people of the Hitler diaries, the Waffen-SS, and people like SS Karl Wolf, who allegedly passed away recently, and I'll do more again on these people and the lies of the bunker and the lies that there was no Holocaust, the story of Martin Bormann covered up. But here is Willie Cardo having 6 years of meetings, and I'll give you a list of tapes he has available that you can order, saying there was no Holocaust while the money is going to Mengele, who was in the camp doing it, experimenting and doing it. What a story. And the B'nai B'rith, the implications of the Jewish organizations, I'll tell you in about a minute. This is the end of the first half hour, so we'll take a one-minute break and then do a little bit about the B'nai B'rith. I've had a little experience with them, too.